shows you on, see on the screen, it shows you on the screen.
All right, you're fine. Thank you, Holly.
Okay, thank you. So I'm calling, this session of the Independent Oversight Committee is now called to order. The date is Wednesday, April 19th, and the time, 2023, and the time is 5:16 PM. We will have members of the committee announce themselves for purposes of establishing for the record that a quorum is present. I'll begin. Holly Geisel, co-chair.
Josh Wenzel, co-chair.
Kathy Rowe, vice chair.
Dr. Jack Foss, member.
Matthew John Moody, the first LAC.
So we are all present to constitute a quorum. We have our agenda that was published timely. Thank you, Larry. We will have several potential new members visiting with us tonight. It's very exciting. The first potential member who is here is Rachel Strife, and I think you can see her.
Not logged on.
Oh, she's not logged on. Okay, that's fine.
You can hear my voice.
And Rachel is the parent of a child with serious mental illness and living with serious mental illness. She's quite an expert in pharmacology regarding various drugs. She's an active advocate in the community and has helped to put together a group of mothers who meet regularly and provide hands-on assistance in the community to individuals and families and parents who are in crisis. I've been very impressed with their work, most recently in locating an individual who was admitted to one of the crisis centers, walked in, no clothes, and walked out, escaped, and was missing in Phoenix for over 72 hours, and luckily was found in part by the advocacy efforts of the folks that Rachel has convened. There will be, I believe, a couple of other folks joining us later. As they join virtually, we will announce them. So thank you, Rachel, for being here. I hope you don't decide after one meeting not to come back. Give us a couple of chances.
Thanks for inviting me.
Josh and I have no update other than the work that we've been doing to recruit new members, and we're very pleased. We both know Rachel. We're pleased that she's here. And moving on, I'm very happy, thanks to Matthew Moody, a couple of sessions ago, we talked about having Solaris talk to us, explain who they are, tell us what they do. It's a vital role. And Matthew organized that, and we're very, very lucky to have Shelby Graves here, who's going to tell us about Solari. And I'm going to move right to that so everybody can have benefit of hearing. Shelby, I'm not telling the truth. I see that Summer Mutter is on. Hi, Summer. Summer is another mom of an individual living with serious mental illness. She is his guardian. She's been his guardian most of his life. He's an adult. And it's her brother, and her brother has not only serious mental illness, but autism and developmental disability challenges. Summer has managed it brilliantly, and she's a very active advocate in the community. And we're very grateful that she's considering, given her other activities, coming on as a member of our IOC. And thank you for being here, Summer.
Thank you, Holly.
Okay, Shelby, now I'm really telling the truth, and the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Holly, and thank you all for letting me be here. As mentioned, my name is Shelby Graves. I'm the Public Health and Community Outreach Administrator for Solari, and I've been with the organization for a little over 6 years, so it's been a while. Love the work that we do, and I'm here just to kind of share a little bit about what we do and some of those resources that maybe you didn't realize were a part of our organization, and or maybe some new resources for for folks. So please, if you have questions, this is an opportunity for you guys to ask questions and be a part of the conversation. So if things come up, please interrupt and ask away. That's what I'm here for. So a little bit of background about Solari. We're celebrating our 15th anniversary this year. And previously we were Crisis Response Network. And then a couple of years ago, we rebranded to Solari. And the reason why we rebranded is we recognize that services that we provide are more than just a crisis line. It's an essential part of our organization, but we have a whole plethora of different services available. And so we came up with the word Solari. The first part of the word is Sol, which is Spanish to console. And then ARI is the first three letters of the state of Arizona. So when you get to combine it together, it's Solari. And that's what we're here to do, is we're here to help support and console folks through this crisis system and in prevention. So we are a nonprofit organization based here in Arizona. Like I said, we've been celebrating our 15th year anniversary, and we have two different divisions. We have the Crisis Response Network, which houses things like the Crisis Line, CRN. We also have the Peer Support Warm Line. And then under the Community Support Network, we have things like 211 Information Referral, Be Connected, and some more of those support systems. So again, we've been around for a long time, and we're here to be. So we are nationally accredited. We are actually on the forefront of crisis services throughout the United States. So we're very proud of the work that we do. How many of you guys have heard of 211 or have utilized those services before? A couple of hands. Yeah. Hopefully it went well. So here I'm going to hopefully share the live website for 211. So as you look at the site, I just like to show it just because if you've used it before, it may have been updated. Many of us remember those good old fashioned books that we used to have resources in for services for recommending for people. But now you can have it all listed here on the 211 website. It's 211arizona.org. You can call 211 24 hours a day. We have folks available to answer the phone in both English and Spanish. And the website, again, is available, obviously, 24 hours a day. So up here at the top, you have the English, and then you can switch it over and click Spanish. It is ADA accessible. So if somebody has a specialty device, the website should still work for them as well. So if you switch over to Spanish, if that's more of a preferred means, feel free to do that. Within 211, there's a whole variety of different services that we can search for. There's things like food, shelter, utility assistance, rental assistance for veterans. I heard somebody attended the Veterans Symposium today. So for that population, you can also utilize the veterans and military. 211 is also statewide. So for many of us, we are familiar with those resources maybe that are local in our area, maybe within a few mile radius. But if we're asked for somebody that maybe lives on the other side of the valley or Northern Arizona or Southern Arizona, sometimes we don't have those services as readily available in our pockets. So again, you can search for services any of the different 15 counties within Arizona. We also have some other support lines like the COVID hotline, housing crisis line, transportation. All of these are different resources. As it's starting to warm up in the valley, we have heat relief information. So if somebody needs a safe spot to go get out of the heat, that's all through here as well. So again, 211 is updated every quarter. So we call all the resources to make sure they're still accepting new people and make sure any of the information hasn't changed as you go through these services. So again, so if you click on food, for example, if I'm needing emergency food, there's a variety of different opportunities. We'll just say we're in Phoenix. That's our location. We'll look up the food pantries. And of course, whenever I'm sharing my screen is when my internet goes slow. So give it, there we go, 1 second. So like, for example, if you click on a service, a nice resource is it gives you all the information. So if there's any specific hours or if somebody needs to provide documentation. Say they're applying for utility assistance, they're going to need to show documentation for that resource. It would all be listed here, and you can email, text, or print the service directly from the website. So if you're utilizing your own personal device, you don't have to text somebody from your phone. You can text them from this website and it goes to their phone. So kind of a nice resource for those of us that are out and about in the community and not wanting to provide our personal information to other folks. So again, all of this is available 24 hours a day for anyone within the state of Arizona. Again, we have folks that are here to help with things like housing or utility assistance, whatever the service is that they're looking for. So I'll ask y'all, what do you think is the most common service that 211 has, or people are requesting through 211?
Shelter space.
Shelter, okay.
Substance abuse services.
Mm-hmm.
Transportation.
What? Yes. Utility assistance.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like you've read my slide before. So yes, listed here are pretty much all the ones you just mentioned. Housing and shelter is the most common, followed by utility assistance, healthcare, food, disaster services, mental health or substance use treatment, and income assistance as well. So there's a whole variety of different services. Sometimes folks automatically only think about housing or shelter or food, but there is a plethora of services out there for folks throughout the state of Arizona. So another line of business that we have at Solari is the 988 or crisis line. So as many of you guys are aware of, the National Suicide Lifeline went to the 3-digit dialer a little bit ago. So here's kind of for those that like the timeline, here is the timeline. So the service has been available for many years through Solari for Arizonans. But just in July of 2022, we launched the 3-digit dialer. So instead of having to dial 1-800-273-8255 to get the National Suicide Lifeline, you can just dial 988 and get connected to your local provider. So again, the crisis line has been proven to work. It's individuals that call in often feel less depressed, less suicidal, less overwhelmed, and really more hopeful. And that's what we're really here to do, is to provide that hope and that resiliency for folks that need that additional help or assistance, especially in that time. So a few different things to keep in mind when you're calling the National Suicide Lifeline versus our local crisis response network or Solari Lifeline. You're routed by your area code. So if you dial 988, you're routed based on the area code that you're calling in from. So for example, I still have my same phone number I had when I was 16 in Oregon. So I would be routed to Oregon and just have to be transferred back to Arizona. When you call into the 988, there's a few different prompts that they're going to ask for, like press 1 for a veteran, press 2 for Spanish, and a few things before you're able to talk to a live person. Locally, if you call the statewide crisis line, you're routed directly to Solari. A live person will answer within seconds. Usually it's a couple of rings, and then somebody is there to talk to you. We can also dispatch mobile teams and crisis teams to different locations throughout the state. If you call 988, we can still help with that. It's just a little bit different of a process. But either way, no matter which line of business you call, whether you call 988, or you call the statewide crisis line, you're routed to our crisis providers that are able to provide the best service available. So we're here to help. No matter, there's no wrong door. We want people to call to ask for help, whichever is the easiest way for them to do that. It's important to kind of recognize that. So some of those reasons somebody might call is probably what many of you guys would expect. Maybe they're feeling depressed or anxious about what's going on. Maybe they're needing additional assistance with coordinating their care. They're experiencing psychosis, relationship or social concerns. Maybe they're having thoughts of suicide or utilizing substances and wanting to get additional support or treatment, or they're a danger to themselves or others. Really, there's no wrong door. We recognize that a crisis is going to be different for each person. What is a crisis for me and what's a crisis for you might be different. So no matter what's going on, we all have different experiences. Please call us. We're here to help. We're here to provide that assistance and support. Any questions so far? I know I'm kind of talking a lot, so I want to make sure you guys don't have any questions. I'll take the silence as no. And please, again, if you have questions, interrupt, ask away. So a common thing that people will ask, what happens when I call? It's important to know that we will ask for your name, birth date, and phone number. The reason we're asking that is just we want to know what your preferred name is, a birth date, so we can kind of figure out age, what's going on, and phone number in case we get disconnected. It's important to note that you can remain anonymous if you don't want to share the information. We just ask for like mobile teams. We do need additional information. We will ask about someone's suicidal feelings. Are they thinking of harming themselves? Are they thinking of suicide? We will ask those questions. So if you're uncomfortable or unsure how to ask that, call us. We will help. You can put it on a three-way speaker or call them in, however you want to do that. We're fine answering or asking those questions. We're not afraid. That's our job, and we're here to do that. It's also important to recognize that the information is private and confidential. So if you share something, unless we need to coordinate additional support, everything is confidential. You don't need to share or worry about not having that be. We also can recognize that sometimes, especially with this, if somebody is experiencing maybe the early onsets of having a hard time, if you're able to call us sooner, the better the outcome is for you, your community, and your supports. So recognizing, please call us no matter what's going on. And again, you can call for somebody if you're concerned as well. And I think I saw a question pop up. Sorry, I'm not very familiar with this.
Yeah, this is Rachel. I have a question.
Of course.
It relates to being a third party. The kind of the space that I'm in is frequently helping families where there is a person with psychosis and poor insight that's not able to help themselves. Can crisis send a team out without, at the request of a third party, without the individual requesting the help themselves? If that makes any sense. I've run into this difficulty where I haven't had this recently specific situation where the person in crisis is not capable of asking for help.
Sorry, I don't know if you can hear me. I lost audio. One second. Can you hear me? Okay. I just can't hear you guys. Okay. Hold on. Hold on. Sorry. I'll jump off and jump back on. I apologize. Everything went silent. I can see your voice.
We can hear you, Shelby.
Okay.
I'm on their end.
Perfect. So you can hear me now? I can now hear you. Sorry. I apologize. I don't know what happened. It went silent for me. So here we go. All right. So I think what Rachel was asking, sorry, that's when it kind of cut out, was can you call a mobile team for somebody else that's having a hard time or needs that additional assistance? And when we're dispatching mobile teams, we can, if the situation is applicable or if that's needed. So the majority of the time when people call into the crisis line, we're able to handle the calls over the phone. Now, we're only dispatching a small percentage, so it's important just to recognize that if that additional assistance is needed, that we can help do that. Now, it turns into a little bit harder when it's a youth under the age of 18, so then that, you know, we require parent consent and that kind of thing as well. So does that answer your question, Rachel? I'm sorry, I missed part of it. Oh, you're on mute, sorry.
Unmute.
Okay.
Hey, so we're all using Holly's audio, so that's why you
can hear. Sorry.
Yeah, so my question is, someone else is struggling, they're in psychosis. I'm the freaking out family member. This hurts and clearly needs help to go to the hospital. They can't ask for the help themselves because they're too sick to realize they need help. I want to get a mobile crisis team out to help this adult, if you will. But I have been encountered in the past where they said, well, that person really needs to ask for help themselves and want us to come out. And so that's what I'm asking. Can a mobile team come help me with another person who is not capable because they're too sick or what have you to ask for help themselves? That was my question.
Yes. So we can set up mobile teams to provide like a welfare check for folks as needed. Now, it's important to recognize that in Arizona, if somebody doesn't want to get help, we can do a petition, but that turns into a whole different thing. So we would like the person to have that consent that, yes, I would like the additional help or support, but we can provide that assistance as well if needed. Ideally, you know, especially if they're an adult over 18, you know, they have that
free will. So the second part of that is, will you help with a petition?
We can, yes, we can help with that. That whole, it's a whole process. So I'm not going to go into the
very familiar with the process.
Yes, we can, as a mobile team that shows up on scene can help, or through the crisis line, we can help as well. So there are a variety of different ways that we can go about assisting. We would like to try all other, you know, solutions before we do a petition, but we definitely can help with that process.
This is Dr. Potts. A couple of questions I make. I'm a committee member. Number one, if a guardian calls on behalf of their ward, and then you show up, and the ward says they don't want to talk, can the guardian then say, no, I need you to do more evaluation? What is your policy on that? And is it in writing?
So that would be up to the mobile team. So an important thing to note, when they show up, they're not part of Solari. So our mobile teams are dispatched. We're contracted with other providers throughout the Valley. So they're going to have different processes and requirements for each organization. We are more like air traffic control. So
So they don't contract with you. They contract with Ariba then, correct?
Yes. So providers through our behavioral health system throughout the state of Arizona. So yes.
Okay. And then the second question is, you note that information provided is private and confidential, and you're the 911, essentially your 988 or 211 dispatcher. How many times you call law enforcement to back up the team, and or is that something that the crisis team does on their own?
So we can help with that. And actually, in just a few slides, I'm going to have statistics for those that like to see, like, how often do we call first responders, and or how often do we contract with them, and how often do they call us to send out mobile teams to the location. So if you give me 1 second, sir, I will show you that data. Sometimes that kind of helps, and we'll talk through that in just a moment. So again, just going back to the expectations, it's important just to recognize, again, we're going to ask name, phone number, and information regarding if we get disconnected. We will ask about their suicidal ideations. We'll also ask some follow-up questions, like, how long have you been feeling like this? Have you talked to somebody else before? That kind of gives us a good baseline of what's going on for an individual. And maybe we're not the first time they've talked to somebody. Maybe we can help coordinate that care as well. So again, just kind of overviewing the process here. So the individual calls 988 or the statewide crisis line. If needed, we can dispatch mobile teams. Again, that's a small percentage of our calls. The majority of the time we're able to handle the call over the phone. And if needed, a mobile crisis team can take somebody to a crisis facility, and they can get that post-crisis follow-up services as well. Again, we can help provide those additional help and support as needed, but it's important just to recognize we are more like the air traffic control, so we recognize where the calls are coming from and dispatch those mobile teams. They're not employed through Solari. So this slide just kind of shows the 988 versus our statewide crisis center. So the green numbers are the lifeline, and the The purple numbers show our statewide crisis line. So you can recognize we've been providing these services for the last few years. We have seen an increase since 988 took over versus the 1-800 number, but just recognize our statewide crisis facilities. We are taking about 40,000 calls a month to services. So this is the slide that I was talking about earlier. So we have a community dashboard that is external facing. It's on our Solari website and it's updated like within seconds. I took the screenshot earlier today just so it recognizes current information. So you can see here that we take about 38 to 40,000 calls a month within the last 30 days. We answer about 99.3. So that's one of the top numbers for the United States within 9 seconds. And we're able to stabilize over the phone 88% of the calls. So the mobile teams is actually a small number of calls. But down here at the bottom, you can see the mobile team dispatch. So again, we're dispatching around 4,000 to 5,000 mobile teams as needed. And then the bottom right, this shows law enforcement collaboration. So like within the last 30 days, law enforcement has contacted us requesting mobile teams or additional assistance over 2,500 times. And we dispatch law enforcement to scenes only over 1,117 times. So the reason why we would dispatch a law enforcement to a scene is if there's a weapon, if there is a medical emergency, we can recognize mobile teams have a lower or longer response time than police, right? We all recognize they can get there within moments. So it's important to recognize that. Or if there is a weapon, we're going to need the scene safe for mobile teams to get there. We are working, and Matthew is part of this, with different cities law enforcement to provide a crisis specialists in 911 dispatching so we can help take those calls that are behavioral health calls away from 911 and we can send mobile teams for those locations versus sending police. We recognize they have a different role. They're there to protect and keep people safe. We're here to provide the behavioral health support and assistance. So again, we contact law enforcement as needed. It's a really low number, but we can recognize that they contact us quite often needing that additional help or support for the community.
Ms. Graves, this is Dr. Potts again.
Yeah.
It looks like 20% of your calls, you dispatch law enforcement or ask them to respond as well. Well, you have the number of 1,000 here, dispatches for law enforcement, and total number of calls, 5,000.
And that's calls to everyone. Us, and how many times we dispatch mobile teams for the police.
Okay. How many times are law enforcement called by you?
That would be 1,000.
Sorry?
So in 30 days, only 1,000 times out of almost 40,000 calls did we contact police, and that was because of a medical
I'm sorry. It dispatches for law enforcement, doesn't say, and then you have mobile team dispatch volume by month. So help me with that. I see those two graphs next to each other, both in purple. You dispatch mobile team 5,000 times a month, and is law enforcement asked to accompany or precede them 1,000 times a month?
Yes, or we will, for dispatch for law enforcement, that could be in collaboration. So we are sending out mobile teams and first responders to a scene if there's that additional help or support.
On 20% of the time?
It's 1%.
For total mobile teams? Yes.
Yeah.
Not,
not for police.
Okay, so you break it down from law enforcement to other agencies such as ambulance and fire, because law enforcement can always be problematic when they get involved. If they're not specifically CIT trained, etc. That's the question I have. You break it down as to what type of, well, it says law enforcement. Fire is not law enforcement, so I'm confused.
Shelby, is it okay if I jump in here?
Yeah. Go ahead. Yes, thanks, Matt.
Okay, so there's a couple different stats that are getting mixed up here.
Okay.
We dispatch mobile teams on all calls, 15 to 20%-ish of the time. That's just mobile teams for people calling from the community. like 5,000-ish times per month, they're transferring us. 911 is transferring us phone calls. We take those calls over, and the police and fire and everyone walk away from it at that point. The 1,200 you're seeing in the bottom right is how many times first responders request mobile teams for us. Don't get me hammered on the specific language here. I believe that fire department is excluded from that. The fire department and ambulances don't really respond to crisis situations. They respond to medical situations. So if we're calling and they need help, if they're not having an immediate medical issue, like they're cutting, they're bleeding, they've overdosed on medications, we're not dispatching the fire department. We have to dispatch first, like law enforcement, like police, because the response time and because fire just doesn't do that type of work. Now, some departments, fire departments have specialized crisis mobile teams. That's completely separate from this whole system.
Why?
Well, those are run by independent municipalities, and right, they decided they want to do those separate from the crisis system.
Mesa, Scottsdale.
Well, actually, Mesa does work with the REBA and has specialized teams through the REBA.
So I'll be with this number here. It says 5,000 team dispatch volume by month.
That's out of all.
All right, out of 40,000 calls, 5,000 per month, average for that 1 month.
Yeah.
Okay. Law enforcement collaboration, 1,000 dispatch law enforcement per month.
Correct. That's out of that 5,000.
Yeah, so that's 20%.
Oh, 20%. Yeah, sorry. I thought you were saying 20% of the calls. Yes.
Yeah, 20% of the dispatches are accompanied by law enforcement, it appears.
Yep.
Okay. One, and that does not include fire. Like you said, it's a medical emergency. There's no reason to dispatch police. They're not medical emergency responders. An ambulance or fire is a medical emergency. So I was confused when you said that's what you'll do. So what can I understand that? But medical emergency for, you just call law enforcement?
Well, so now we're in the weeds here, but 911 is the access point for all first responders. And if we call 911,
you call 911.
Yeah, so they have to send police and fire a lot of times.
Let me see if I can clarify that from a couple of cases. In Arizona, fire follows police. So the police, whenever there's a 911 call, and there's generally, the police will go and go to the location, and fire stages more remotely. And then by more remotely, I mean 50 yards, 100 yards down the block. And then they will come. I think this is a really interesting point because I think a lot of municipalities are trying different approaches here. And we will make an effort for a future meeting to have some law enforcement people come and talk about how fire follows police and has that been modified recently in the past few years. The last in-depth discussion I had was probably with the Chandler, Mesa, Scottsdale, Tempe, Gilbert, and they may have modified it. So let's get that in as something to clarify. So good. Thank you. And thanks for those clarifications and Dr. Potts through your questions.
I have another question relating to this, and this came up over the weekend. There was an approved petition for a person who was missing. And we called crisis when that person was located and wanted crisis to take that person in, but that does not happen. It had to be police.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a situation that's a little bit difficult. We wanted a crisis mobile unit to do this task, but it wasn't allowed to be done by other than police. And so that was a indication for crisis to call police, and police had to handle it.
Okay.
Now, they did a good job. So nothing against that, but this was a situation where police were called. It couldn't be handled by crisis. So
great. Thank you. Yeah. Joy Green is here, and she has a question.
I'm wondering when I call the police, are the police always notified or are they trained in CIT?
Not always. Not all.
So, Shelby, when you call the police, when you call 911, do you ask for a CIT trained unit, or how does that go?
If they're available, we will request it, but not all, you know, CIT is, they elect to be a part of this. This is not a requirement for their job. They are choosing to go through this extensive training. Solari does help, and Matthew is part of that as well, with training the CIT officer. So they know what to do, how to approach. I personally helped with that as well. So we will request them if applicable. And usually when we're calling them or you know, dispatching them to scenes, they're recognizing that we're the behavioral health agency calling that as well. So approach hopefully will be different. But again, not every city throughout the state of Arizona has CIT officers. We are blessed, you know, within the Maricopa County to have many, but again, outliers, there are, we handle crisis services throughout the state of Arizona. So to say,
thank you.
But let me ask you then, is it part of your policy when you're calling, your operators call 911 to say, we are requesting CIT if available?
Yes, please. Yeah. Ask that. If you know that it's a behavioral health call and that you want a behavioral
health. Any behavioral health call is coming to you.
Not if you're if you're dialing 911, then.
No, if you're calling, you misunderstood, miss. Saying when you get the call to your crisis line and you say, we need another responder, are your operators trained to say, we would like CIT response if available?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I think Darren has a question.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is all a new platform for me, so I apologize.
Sorry. I don't know why my brother's name is showing up as me. My question kind of piggybacking off of Rachel, you know, when a person is in crisis, they have a guardian that also has mental health authority to place them in a hospital, but they can't safely transport themselves, you know, because maybe they're psychotic, you know, they're maybe being a little bit aggressive. Even though the guardian is saying like, he needs to go, I have that authority, here you go. Can crisis still deny helping to transport that psychotic, you know, sick individual that needs inpatient care?
Matt, do you know? I don't know the answer to that.
Let me give you the answer. And I'll tell you, because I deal with this with Josh and others, and we deal with it. If the only way to get someone against the will to get in the car, i.e. not kidnap them, which is what you're doing, if they don't want to go, is Title 26. Even with guardianship.
It's not kidnap.
No, I know it's not. But to force someone into a car, crisis shouldn't do it. And my understanding from everyone I've talked to, there is no mechanism for the police, nor should the police be doing it, because they don't have a judicial order to back them up. That's been law enforcement's issues for a long time. They need a court order to transport. So if you can cajole them, but if I was a crisis worker and the person didn't want to get in my car, I'd have a difficult time assaulting them to put them in the car. So that's the one problem with mental health powers. Now Josh knows mental health powers better than I do, but that certainly was brought up with law enforcement years ago under Title 14.
Yeah, and I'd agree. The authority of a guardian would extend to taking custody of that person and transporting them to wherever. But it doesn't mean you could stop somebody in the street and say, hey, I have guardianship, take my kid to the hospital. And in essence, that's what Solari is, their community service. It doesn't mean that the guardian has any authority or jurisdiction over them. And that's the problem. Really, it should be police or fire, but they absolutely will not do it without a specific provision within the order from the Superior Court. So it is a big issue, and it makes the mental health authority with the guardianship almost worthless.
Yeah. So let me give a kind of an example. Let's say I have a family member, my son, who's an adult son, and who's an adult, and that person has become psychotic, diagnosed with this, let's say bipolar disorder, psychotic, not taking medicines, becoming more and more disoriented. I call crisis. crisis, I call Solari, you send out a crisis team, the crisis team gets there, and my son throws a chair across the room and hits me. Hopefully somebody's going to call the police. But if nobody calls the police, can Solari at that point do anything other than continue to, can the crisis team do anything other than continue to talk and try to get the person to go with them? Can they do anything?
They would go and file a petition. They don't have authority to pick somebody up. And the reason that police have authority in the process is there is an order signed by a judge.
Right.
A pickup order that gives the police the authority to go out and pick. After a petition is filed, or an application is filed, the person's given some due process.
Okay. That.
But you can't just, but Solari is totally inappropriate.
Got it.
To pick somebody up. If they see behavior, they should go and petition.
All right, that's so they the should, Solari should go and petition. Okay, now you call the police. I have lots of clients who the police will see doing something inappropriate, whether it's setting fires in a trash can or urinating in public on a sidewalk, and they'll engage with the individual and they'll determine that they believe they're mentally ill and that they're either gravely disabled because of the way they're looking, or that they're a danger to themselves or to others. One person was swinging a belt in the running down the middle of the street. So they picked him up and they took him to crisis. They took him to UPC. Mm-hmm. So why can't you call the police, have the police pick the person up at their house when they throw the chair across, or you tell them you threw the chair at me across the room and they take him to UPC and petition?
You could, and the statute even changed it. I mean, statute always has been police seeing that behavior can pick up on the spot without the pickup order and take to UPC or RI or CBI. It's changed a few years ago to include the police can show up on a scene, take the testimony or the word of somebody who saw the behavior, and then pick up and do the same thing.
Perfect. So, without a petition.
Without a petition being filed. They would then go and file.
Or they may take them to jail. That's the issue.
And if they throw a chair at their mom,
that's right. So one of the answers to that is you cajole them by saying, come in my car, we're going to go Jack in the Box, and you go to the emergency room. And then once they're on the grounds or in the emergency room, then you have the authority to say they can't leave. Right?
I think it's a really interesting discussion. We're going to move on through the agenda, but I have I think sometimes the police serve a very important purpose in picking up people who are going to become more dangerous than they already are. And so we can talk about that later. So, Shelby. Continue. Thanks.
Of course. Yeah. So just a few different local helplines that just to be aware of. There is the Teen Lifeline, and that's for youth. It's staffed by youth, and they're available from 3 to 9. It's important to recognize if a call is a higher acuity or they need additional support or assistance, those calls are routed to Solari. So we will handle those if needed. But for teens, having that ability to talk to another teen kind of reduces that stigma and that barrier. We also have a peer support warm line. That's staffed by peer support specialists. So if somebody is just having a hard time, we need somebody to talk to. We've all had those moments in life. We just need somebody to listen. We know what we need to do, but we just want somebody to be that ear. The warm line is wonderful at that. You can call and talk for 15 minutes every hour. Again, that's available 24 hours a day as well. 211, we've talked about the crisis line. Again, we've talked about, you can also text HOPE to 4-HOPE. Or just text 4-HOPE if you would like to text instead of call the crisis line. That's a great service for those of us that are texters versus callers. It's a great resource as well. So again, there are a variety of different lines. 211, again, if somebody's needing that utility assistance, food box, shelter, transportation, that kind of thing, call 211, call the crisis line or 988 if they're having suicidal thoughts, experiencing substance use or mental health challenges, please call us for that. And again, 911, call 911 if somebody is at an immediate risk, if there is a danger to that person. So recognizing there are different lanes for that. Here's a quote from somebody that called into the crisis line. The specialist helped me reflect and think through my experience I've never called the crisis line before, and I'm so, so glad I did. I woke up feeling hope, and I'm now able to listen and speak positive messages to myself. So really, that's what we're here to do, is to provide that help and hope for individuals. A couple of different lines of business that you might not be aware of. We have Eligibility and Care Services, or ECS, and they do the SMI determinations for the state of Arizona. So that's also part of Solari. It's a different branch of our organization. As we've talked about, we dispatch mobile teams. We are not the mobile teams on the boots on the ground. That is not us. We are the air traffic control dispatching side of things. We also house the Arizona Homeless Management Information System. So for individuals experiencing homelessness, we house that database. For first responders, we have the police and fire support line. So for police, it's Bulletproof, and for fire departments, it's Fire Strong. So they can call and get that additional help or support for themselves, calling a different number than a crisis line that they call in a professional capacity. We also have Be Connected, that's part of our organization. And Be Connected is for veterans, service members, and their families. So if somebody needs that wraparound service or support, and they are a veteran, it doesn't matter their discharge status, anybody can call, or their family or supports, and get that additional assistance. Some of the things they do are, I've heard stories of a veteran received an apartment but didn't have things to put in it, so they were able to coordinate with other nonprofits to get, you know, a couch, a bed, the things that he needed for his home. And then another story was a veteran needed specialty shoes to start a construction job, but couldn't afford them because they were in between jobs, and they were able to find an organization to donate those for that veteran. So really, we're here to help with that. I've talked about the SMI process here in Arizona. We're the third party that makes the determination. So we will work. So the provider will submit the application to us, and we determine whether or not they meet the criteria. So we are not the person filling out the paperwork, but we are the person making the determination. So we have the psychologists that provide that. And it's the same throughout the state of Arizona. So whether you live in Greenlee County or Maricopa County, everyone's evaluated the same throughout the state. And that is my presentation. So there's my contact information. Again, I'm Shelby Graves, and my email is listed there. So if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out.
Shelby, this is Kathy Rowe. Is there a way that we can have a copy of this PowerPoint?
Sure. I would be happy to send it over.
Thank you.
Great. Ms. Strife has another question.
So thank you, Shelby. And I had I had more than one call on with crisis over the last week. Some of them were very helpful. There is a situation where we have a lot of individuals that are on COT, and they are assigned to SMI clinics. And in the past, I've had my own child in this situation on COT, assigned to SMI clinics. They are closed. SMI clinics are closed on evenings and weekends. And we are told that if our loved one deteriorates or has a problem, that crisis is the extension of the SMI clinic after hours and on weekends. And so that is a role that crisis is playing that is pretty much real important for families like mine if I've got a kid on COT. So one challenge we had over the last week was that this individual needed to be admitted back to the hospital, and crisis could not facilitate that. They said if you had a copy of the COT order, you would be able to do this, but they would come pick you up, but you're going to have to fill out a petition for that COT person, and, you know, crisis wouldn't do it. They wanted the family to do it. Now, it appears when I call crisis that if I have an SMI designated person assigned to an SMI clinic, crisis has all the information on that patient. I can just give them the name, date of birth, and they have that information. Why don't they have access to the fact that they're on COT? Why don't they have the COT order right in front of them so that they can recognize this is different? Here's a COT person. We need to get them, you know, evaluated and brought in. So that's been a challenge for us. You know, why does a person who's entitled to this kind of support, having to go through the same hoops as any person off the street. And they're already declared by a judge to be danger to self, others, like persistent acutely disabled. Shouldn't be this hard to get them back in the hospital after hours.
The reason, Shelby, I don't know if you have a response. I can respond from here.
Go ahead. I'll follow up.
The reason is in the statutes, there are certain people that can file amendments. They all work inside the clinics. And so during the weekends, like that, amend the treatment letter would be rejected by the judge because the wrong person is filing. And so that's why.
That's a gap.
That's something that should be, that we need to go to the legislature about.
Yeah.
There's always someone who's a medical director of an agency 24/7. There should be, just like the judges on call 24/7 do these things. So it would be easy to say someone must be available with the reader 24/7 to do such an amended order. It's an easier fix than the statute.
You know, it's the clinics.
That's true. And so.
Hey, Holly, this is Liz Agbula.
Hi, Liz.
Hey, Holly. Every clinic should have a 24-hour line. And so even if they don't answer, someone has to call them back. And if they're missing this form, they should be able to send it to them. We've had those issues in the past, and we've never had a challenge with the after-hours line calling us back with the information that we needed to petition somebody.
Interesting. I think first of all, Shelby, it's been wonderful. I've got notes and notes. We're going to make sure that your presentation goes on the IOC website part of the Access IOC pages and your slides. And we'll talk a little later, but this meeting, it will be Google transcribed. So there will actually be a hard copy available, which I think is going to be invaluable because these are complex subjects. So I'm really excited about that. And we are going to have a follow-up list for this committee to talk about, including legislation and other things.
And let me say, in response to Liz's comment, it's different when someone who runs a provider like Liz calls and when a family member calls. The responsiveness from that 24-hour, from the on-call medical director is night and day.
Bingo.
There will not be a call back to a family.
Okay.
To somebody who runs a provider, there will be. And so what IOC should do is call in the different agencies and say, who is your 24-hour person that can call, that can be called on the weekend to file an amendment? That's the role of the IOC, and that's the thing we should be doing.
Excellent. I love that. And also, that there should be the petition.
I would say we should motion to have access.
All right, we'll do that. Well, let's talk about it. Would you like to make a motion?
I don't know specifically what motion we should make, but how should we say that, Jeff? You know.
Are you talking about having those who run the SMI providers
meet with us and develop a solution to the gap?
Access would be a good addition, but I think so. I would motion to
I don't know how to word up that stuff.
Motion to request presentations from the SMI health homes, CEOs of the SMI health homes, on availability of their medical directors on the weekends.
What did we do when we needed the emergency meetings?
Let me ask for a second. Is there a second to that motion?
I second it.
All right. So the seconding member was Matthew. Josh made the motion. And is there discussion? Now let's have discussion.
Thank you. When we were talking with the SMI clinics, they didn't have the emergency appointments available. We got them to put a block. You know what I mean? We made them put a block almost every day where if there was an emergency and someone missed their appointment, they could go get scheduled. What did we call it then? What was the mechanism we used to enforce that?
I don't know.
Do you remember that? It was a couple of years ago.
Remember, we just requested, we said that there was a deficit here. We mentioned it. Let me ask, I don't think we need people to come and tell me what to do. I want to see it in writing. There's a note to us to return, so we have, we can, if we have questions, we can ask them, but I'd rather see what the policies are for returning to phone calls rather than waste a CEO or the person's time.
I totally disagree.
I'd like to know.
Getting them to take note of the fact that the IOC is looking at these things, noticing the problems and asking them to change, having the CEO here to talk about so that they then go back to their agency and either check the policy.
I would like to see what the policy is first, so I'm not asking the policy if it's already in writing. I want to know before, so I can ask the CEO why are we having people saying they call and don't get a return calls. I'm simply asking to get that information first, so then we can have a follow-up and say it's not working this way with the CEOs.
I mean, I think that the REBA policy manual probably has that.
But I'd like to see it.
No number for families to call. All SMI families are told to call the crisis line after hours. That's the extent.
I'd like, before we invite them, I'd like to know what questions I want to ask them. That's all. I would ask to amend that motion to get documents regarding what the policies are to the committee, and then we can take it from there. So then I can ask some smart questions.
Okay. Would you accept the amendment?
No.
Are you going to get the policies?
I'm going to get the policies.
All right. So we'll have the policies. In advance.
Yes.
Of the meet, in advance of the meeting or the discussion with the CEOs.
Can't discuss issues that are I'd like to questions when we had a public presentation, but one time a motion.
Okay, so we have a motion from Dr. We have a motion from Josh, seconded by Matthew. I'm going to call for. We've had discussion, and there was a proposed amendment which Josh did not accept. So I will then ask for the vote. All in favor of Josh's motion as stated, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. The motion passes. We will put that on a follow-up agenda. It may not be next month, but it will be soon. Okay, thank you very much again, Shelby. I really appreciate it. And we will move on through the agenda now.
Well, I thank you all. I will hop off. I appreciate it. If there's again anything I can do, please let me know.
That may be a dangerous offer.
Well, you know, within my scope, anything I can do within my scope of work. There you go.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sure we will ask you back later. Okay. Moving through the agenda now, we have updates from community partners. I'm sure we have provider representatives who are present. Does anyone have an update? Please raise your hand or speak up.
Hi, Holly. This is Joe with Banner. I have no updates at this time.
Okay, thank you. Next.
Thank you.
Hi, Holly. This is Dawn McReynolds with United Healthcare. I also have no updates at this time.
Thank you. Next.
And this is Karen Ulick from Arizona Complete Health. I know that I believe Frederica attached our one pager. We were asked to provide a summary of our contact information, as well as our role with regard to the IOC and OHR. Mm-hmm. And other than that, no updates.
And thank you very much for mentioning that. And it will go on our, my intent is to have it put on the website. I want our place in that website to have as much information as possible. And that was very helpful. Other updates there from providers.
I
Don't believe we have any. Okay, moving on. Updates from community organizations. I don't believe we have anybody from NAMI on the line, but Matt, do you have anything from MHA? Matt's the chairman of the board of MHA.
Yes. So we actually have our annual SEED conference April 27th. So next Thursday, it's at ASU Sky Song facility. I don't know the right word is Sky Song Center. So we're really excited about it. That our theme this year is Beyond the Basics, Community Connections for Mental Health in Arizona. It is virtual and in person, so it is a hybrid. So if people want to apply or watch from home, they can. And we have a lot of really cool presenters, so I would encourage you guys to go to Mental Health America or MHAArizona.org and look at it.
It's on Thursday, 4/27.
Yeah, next Thursday.
Okay, and what's the cost to get in? Is there a cost?
Why are you asking me the hard questions? I think it's around $50.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. That sounds wonderful. Maybe somebody from IOC can try to go. Well, you'll be there.
I will.
So good. So great. If there is collateral material that's provided, PowerPoints, etc., that are available.
Yeah, I believe it goes on the website after we're done.
Perfect. And if there's anything that you would like to do for us to summarize, high points, highlights, then we'll be happy to take something that you do and try to put it on our website.
Absolutely.
So that we can promote what MHA is doing. Okay, updates from ASH or the Southern and Northern IOCs. I can't tell who's on. Is anybody on from our colleague organizations? Doesn't sound like it. Okay, Josh, legislative update.
I think the only bill super relevant to what we do is SB 1710. You want me to go through a summary of that?
Please.
But SB 1710 is a combination of a couple of bills that we've been pushing for a couple of years. One is are all of you familiar with the Ann Arbor 655 bed cap at the state hospital? Okay.
Person.
So that cap is out of date. Nobody supports it, but it really harms people in the community because people that need beds at the state hospital just can't get them. So the first part of the bill is changing that 55 bed cap to admissions based upon clinical need and not your geography. So if you need the state hospital and you're in Maricopa County and the state hospital's at the 55 bed cap, you can be admitted. So that's one part of it. Then the hospital, state hospital is, it just doesn't do very well. And we want to improve it. And so there's a bill, the second half of the bill is a governance committee, a separate governance committee that's not part of the state hospital. And so through that, we're hoping for some autonomy, oversight, and that the fox isn't guarding the hen house, for lack of a better term, because that's what's happening now. So that flew through the Senate, flew through the House. Now it's really part of a budget negotiation. Holly and I met with the governor's top legislative person, last week. And, there's some kinks that we're trying to work out, some improvements that we want to make. So Holly and I are going to work on the language to do that. And then we're going to return that to the governor's office. And hopefully they will sign it, because that's the last hurdle is getting the governor to sign it. And so that's where we're at with that. We think it's a vast improvement to access to care, the continuum of care within the state, because ASH is a vital component of it. But we also need to improve the place. It's just been on fire for years.
How can we make changes with the legislature doing it?
What's that?
You said you're going to make recommendations for changes and give it to the governor. I'm confused.
Yeah, because all that's...
It's a committee of the whole is looking at it now, I think.
Okay, it's waiting. Yeah, I think it's waiting to go to the committee of the whole.
Yeah.
So, my question is...
Oh, April is the month of strike everythings.
After you did, you can't do any more. They're all stopped.
I
believe a strike everything. I was told by the Fenimore Craig lobbyists that they cannot do that anymore.
Well, we shall see.
But anyway, the question is, how do you change, make changes to the governor's office? The governor can't make changes to legislation.
Or through the budget process.
Okay, so they can amend it in committee now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what we're.
That's what I'm asking.
I think there's a lot of, I think lobbying is sometimes like a great example of urban myths. And if you talk to governors and you talk to folks, they will all tell you there's nothing that can't be done. It's just a matter of how much commitment there is to do it and how much political will there is to do it. So hopefully we'll have, this is the second year that the bill has gotten to this point, essentially to this point.
But it's been nearly unanimous.
Yes, this year.
That's the frustrating part, is it's been nearly unanimous through both chambers.
Right.
But there's hold up with people that are aligned with one representative and his little group, and then with the governor's office, but they seem to be aligned on what they want changed. Right. So Holly and I are going to work on that.
And I think it's really important. I think that this legislation, one of the reasons it's been successful this year is obviously lobbying, very focused lobbying by people. Josh has spent an enormous amount of time down there doing a lot of education. The other thing is that at some point when a place is on fire, you see the fire, you don't just see the smoke. And the last year to 2 years have been devastating in terms of the problems at our state hospital. And this isn't the time or the place, but I think that is something that has come about in the past couple of years. And now legislators who only sort of knew a little bit about maybe there was an issue there have had constituents calling, and they've seen newscasts, they've seen news articles. And so it's become a part of daily life to understand that we need to fix our state hospital. So, and a lot of kudos, a lot of deep thanks to Josh for the amount of time that he has spent down there doing things.
One other thing I might not have noticed, the stuff on secure berths.
Oh, yes.
Which is, the secure berths are the step between the hospital and 24-hour residential. So people going to berths typically just, if they're really sick, they just leave, they cycle through, they get sicker, go through jails, interaction with police, fire, crisis centers, it just keep getting worse. So we created that secure berth 4 years ago. There's $43.5 million allocated to build them, but Medicaid has not got the RFP out. So now, because there's so much concern about it, even when it takes a step back, the only groups in the past few years that's cared about mental health stuff have been the Republicans. And when we take a bill to go, it was always party line. Republicans would vote for it, Democrats against it. And we had Republican governors who had signed up on it. Now, Democrats are stepping up and really creating a firestorm down there and saying, what the hell's going on? Why isn't this out? And so we're moving that along. And there's two populations here in there, one from the criminal code, Title 14, one from the civil code. And so the Title 36 RFP is going out. And there was a longer timeline on Title 13 that we're trying to shorten, and it looks like we're going to really shorten that up. In large part because Nancy Bartow, despite not being elected member anymore, is still fighting her butt off for all these causes and shaking, rattling cages. So that's another big part of our continuum of care for the population that we always are dealing with, that I think make a huge difference in the system.
Great. All right, moving on, we have another prospective member who joined us much earlier. I didn't want to interrupt the presentation, and that is Liz Agbula, who is the CEO of Trinity Healthcare, which runs a number of different kinds of facilities. And it was an apropos segue, because Liz has been extremely active in the policy arena and down at the legislature, working on trying to get secure berths through and helping beat the drums and build the momentum for that. So thank you for coming, Liz, and we'll talk more later. Next item on the agenda is incident SNR site visits. We don't have anything to report there. We're going to be rejuvenating our efforts. Oh, okay. You did an IAD review.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Good. Didn't Larry, can we talk about it on if it wasn't listed?
It is listed as IAD. So.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I thought it was on the agenda.
It is.
Okay.
It, can we talk about it? I'm asking Larry. We put site visits committee. We have two bullets there. So my question is, since we gave the specifics, how can the IOC assure completion? And then how can the IOC assure completion of site visits? Larry, is our agenda too specific to permit a report on an incident and accident report?
No, it's bullet pointed there. You shouldn't have an issue with discussing perfect. That.
Great. Okay, Dr. Potts has a report on an INA.
And we had already, and we previously agreed as a committee that the IAD reports of the standing met part of our agenda.
Okay. Yeah, we did. Absolutely. Okay. I am trying to follow what has been reminders to me about open meeting laws and the specificity of agenda. So give us your report.
Well, the IAD to have that on there and site visit reports that were also agreed to be a standing.
They are. Everybody agrees we'd like your report.
And then I wouldn't have asked Larry. So a couple of things that I have. One that I saw, a couple of them that I want to pass on around is the quality of care. It's different than the seclusion and restraints. Another thing, it's not an IAD in the sense it's a study of what was the complaint in IAD about quality of care. And this is a case, and you can look at the highlight. This is a case where a guardian had their child was on COT and they're also a guardian. They were told, they were complaining, the guardian was complaining that they were not getting the services for their child, such as drug treatment. And they were told, unless he's voluntary for drug treatment, they can't do anything about that. And you can see I've highlighted what this is the report that comes out of an investigation by Access of someone the guardian was complaining about the problems. So I guess scanning that, look at it, and I'm sorry I didn't send it to you an email beforehand. I should have cut and pasted maybe. But I don't know if I can do that if we're gonna discuss it. As long as we don't discuss it on email, right, Holly?
You can circulate it on email.
Okay,
absolutely.
As long as we don't discuss it. Okay, so next time I'll try and cut and paste that. So why don't you pass on that? So the question I have is, Holly, you're not interested in it?
No, I'm looking at something, just a second, and then I'll look at it.
And the next page also does one line. While we're on this, if I can ask Frederica, what's happening? Because special assistance still isn't a category by which one can sort. And you brought that up a year ago and you said they were going to look at reinstating that special assistance. Can you hear me?
What's your question, Dr. Potts?
It was a year ago we talked about special assistance being not able to sort by special assistance category, even though it's listed as a sortable category on the drop-down list.
Right.
So
I didn't hear your question. I'm sorry. It's hard to hear you.
Dr. Potts would like to be able to sort by special assistance as a category. So how do we do that?
It is a drop-down option, but
But there's nothing that's not populated at all.
Right.
And it says in the statute that we had to review special assistance specifically.
Right. So,
so what happened?
Those are the reports that you guys get through the FTP server. Those are all specific for the special assistance reports. So as you know, I don't know who all goes into the FTP to review the special assistance reports, but that's where all of those members go. So if you remember, it was a situation where when CJ had came, I don't know, it's been probably 2 years now, and advised that that would be taken off because of the issue of how the providers were putting the information in, that it was an accurate read of all of the special assistance reports. So that is something that will need to be configured with the IT team to determine if it's something that they'll be able to do. We have tried to figure out a workaround for it, but I'll be honest with you that the ISD team is not as fast as I would like them to be, and they do things on a priority basis. So because the special assistance reports are given directly from myself to the FTP server, that is the workaround at this point until they're able to reconfigure, if they can reconfigure the QM portal for that review.
Okay.
They used to be, we used to be able to look by special assistance, because you can search by non-Title 19, by child and adolescents, and other categories and special assistance. So
that's correct. And again, when CJ had the meeting with you all and discussed that would be taken off because of the way that information was being put in, it's by the user. So it wasn't an actual read of the actual report. In other words, it was human error that was pulling the special assistance people out of that report. So when CJ had came to you all and advised that she was going to be reconfiguring that report so that it would be a more accurate read when someone was trying to pull, you all actually agreed that it would be okay for her to do so. And then that was when the FTP server reports were still in process. So again, I upload those every single month in the FTP server. So if there's ever a question, as always, you guys can send that directly to me and I can do the research on it.
I'm sorry. No, the FTP server is totally different. And she never did. We never, and I clearly remember this. CJ was very good, but the special assistance dropdown for IADs, that category search, disappeared at one point. And I brought that up, noting that there were only 4 of them in 6 month period, and saying why, and you were going to try and see why. And it was because, yeah. I think it was because the clinics and the REBAs weren't doing what they should do to label them as special assistance.
Exactly.
And decided not to. So it was the probability of not an accurate special assistance. But none of us ever, I'm clear on this, agreed that we should not have that as a drop down.
Okay.
Well, the FTP is different. The file transfer protocol that we get on a different website is not the portal that I'm talking about. So I guess that issue is still unresolved. And it was a year ago that we brought that issue up about the special assistance dropdown not being available.
Right. It has been resolved. And Holly, what I can do is I can get the documentation that I sent to Dr. Potts when he was the chair in regards to this, so that you guys can have a clearer picture of what was resolved and the communication on that. I'll go ahead and send that back to you, Holly, and to you, Josh, since you guys are the new chairs, and I can include on that as well, Dr. Potts, so that you guys can see the last communication.
I remember that. I remember you doing that, but still didn't resolve it. So can we talk about this case?
So let's get closure on this issue. So Frederica, thank you. If you would do that, and Larry, let's have a special topic next time on the agenda to follow up on the continued unavailability of data for us to identify special assistance members and do INA and site visits on those members. I also have a question then. Frederica, you get the special assistance data and you personally upload it to the FTP server, right?
Correct.
Okay. So how about if we have you give us that data in a secure manner so that
you guys get it. It's in the FTP server and you all have access to that.
Okay, but that's going to be too, all right, then we'll have to deal with it that way. We can't, in that server, we can't sort it and use it the same way we do the other portal information, right?
Yes, you can.
Okay, all right, fine. Thank you very much for that. So now we'll go back to the case that Dr. Potts has reviewed.
I thought this was of interest, Josh, and you know, I mean, we've talked about this. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on this? It's a case where someone, the mother, I said a guardian, was complaining about not getting the services. And their statement, frankly, was the member's mother was educated that the only treatment that could be offered would be those that the member was willing to take a part in. What do you think? Anyone?
So legally, that's incorrect. I mean, it doesn't matter where you look, whether it's the provider manual, it's the Arizona Administrative Code, it's the access manual. All of them state that every service can be consented to by the patient themselves or the guardian. And if you look at individual levels of care in the administrative code, whether it's an ACT team or a birth or a hospital or consenting to things like ECT, the guardian has the authority. And so there's this urban legend that has really, and I use this phrase all the time, been codified into the law of a provision of behavioral health services that the guardians can't consent. How do we go about changing that? We fight every day, all the time, with these providers on this very issue, and there doesn't seem to be much progress, because what happens is you educate one clinical team, they're like, okay, and then in 6 months, every person on that clinical team is gone, and there's no agency-wide education. And so I don't know, Holly and I typically, then we're like, well, what lawsuit can we file? It's just not practical here. I think if the IOC was going to take something on, again, it's let's call in the REVA, whose provider manual goes through general consent, informed consent, and within both it says member or guardian. Why isn't this being applied throughout the system? I think we have to start with access. Or
I'm wondering if we would want to, if you want me to write a letter of inquiry on this one, say we'd like an investigation reopened because it's inconsistent with the policies and procedures regarding those issues.
And I can make sense. Yeah, and if we could cite, I'll give you all the letters.
I've seen it. Yeah.
But I want you to have it.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have it? All the stuff.
You got a faster than I do.
But I have it in a form.
Mercy Care.
I'm wondering if that might not be the most efficient route here. If we can just get the REVA here to say this is what we have to do, and then they come up with a plan to say we're going to have all of our clinics go to an all site where they explain this, and all the clinical, like they do an email blast and remind everyone that this is the policy per the handbook and per law.
Should use this as an example then, because this is the REVA reviewed this. They gave this answer saying there's no fault here, so something's wrong with the REVA.
So yeah, I think. Yeah.
Could we have a motion to that effect?
You're gonna give me good at these wordings. I would like to make a motion that we ask the Central Arizona REVA to provide insight onto how guardianship should be administered for SMI clients and GMH clients, and that they put in some education for all mental health providers that this is something the guardianship can manage, or like consent to treatment.
Can I modify that by one? We know what the policies are. Why don't we say, why don't we look, focus on specific issue and say, we'd like to leave a
respond, to reinvestigate this and explain why this seemed to be invited, you see, because they don't say this is a policy. They don't know it's so what.
So what is they need to tell, they need to enforce that.
And we can show some examples where they themselves, they're.
My concern is if we do that, then they're going to end up in an investigation, it's take a couple months to come back and do this when we do that. Whereas if we just make a motion right now and vote on it, then we're going to have.
For the next meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
So the motion has been made and seconded. Any more discussion? I think we can. Dr. Potts makes a good idea. We can share that with them as the source of our issues.
Here's this. I'll give it to you.
Perfect.
Whoever wants to.
So the leader is, we're asking a leader to come on. Because I can tell you what the leader is going to say is despite what the manual says, they're going to say, well, you know, the member, this is a voice and choice system, and the member needs consent. Despite what all the policy and law says. So Jack's idea of sending, what were you thinking, Jack? Sending out a letter?
I was thinking of a formal request to respond to this and to address that issue in writing, because I haven't come here and blah, blah, blah. That's what things in writing.
I don't want that. I just want them to say, we are educating all of our providers within the next month and they will adhere to this policy.
Or they refuse to do that.
And then we go.
Okay, and then we take it to the next step.
I think, again, this has been going on for years. Just have them come and tell us what.
They don't need to come here. They just need to tell us.
Oh, unless you said to come.
Well, he had said to come for the other thing. We could do that too.
I don't know what you mean then. You want to come here and question us or not? What do you want? A response? How do you want us to do it?
I'd like it someone in person. I think having someone in person to come and. With this particular case, and then if they say, let them tell us, no, we don't require the guardian, and we can have an educational session and a conversation explaining that it's contrary to the law, and we want them to do site system-wide, what did you call it, site all-site
training,
all-site training in that, and abide by the law, and if for whatever reason they say, no, we're not going to do that, then we have in our meeting, in formal minutes, in a formal setting where we've had a discussion, we've educated everybody about what the legal system requires, and we have their either agreement or disagreement to inform their members, their clinics, that they need to follow the law.
I'm going to amend it with that.
So I think, is that what you intended? Do you
want to? I just want them to say that they're going to do it and then they go train. You know what I mean?
Or refuse.
Sure.
Okay. So I think, does everybody understand the motion? Okay.
Then I have another question, if I may. Are there drug programs that you can sign people into?
That's the other side of it, is the guardian has the authority, but will a drug treatment center accept?
I thought you had a couple of mics.
Yeah, but I work out deals with them. So like, I have to know the ownership, or I have to be willing to pay them extra.
Well, they're not of the REBA system necessarily.
They are, but it takes two to tango. So the guardian's willing to sign them in. Can you find a placement that is willing to take an involuntary person who's going to be disruptive, mess up the milieu, not go to groups? The other patients are like, well, he doesn't have to go to groups. So they don't want those patients. Right. And so that's a separate issue about finding placements that are willing to accept. We need to take care of this. Can the guardian consent to treatment? Issue. It'd be absolutely such a big deal.
So I think that the threshold issue is the one that Dr. Potts has brought to the committee's attention. Thank you so much for identifying that. That's a gold mine of potential problems. It's really good. We've got actually now a case study that we can deal with. Matt's made the motion. We've discussed it. We have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Thank you. We have training and consultative requests on the open meeting law, the QM portal training, Robert's Rules of Order. I think we need now, I think immediately, my understanding is to focus on the portal training. I'm not current on it. I can't sign in because I haven't kept my password current. And Matt has indicated an interest in working in that particular area, which would be fabulous. I think what I would like to do is work with, yes, and Kathy. So I think what I would like to do is work with Larry to get some a system in place for QM training on an individual or group basis. We'll just figure out logistically what makes the most sense. Then we will plan an open meeting law education session, which I think it will be very helpful. Hopefully we can get that done maybe summer, if not sooner. The QM, the portal training is the most important. And then the same thing with Robert's Rules of Order. We can provide a simplified version of Robert's Rules. Nobody really uses the full Robert's Rules anymore, but there are some excellent simplified. I have versions. I have a front and back laminated sheet that's actually pretty good, which we can provide. And I'm very happy we had three new members here tonight, potential new members here tonight. Thank you very much. And with that, we had planned, may I have a motion for a quick executive session?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We will adjourn into the executive committee. We do not vote in executive committee, but we will adjourn to executive committee now, and members of the public need to leave. And I'm reading the script. Take all personal items with you.
Thank you, Holly. This is Dawn from United Healthcare. I'm signing off.
Thank you all, and thanks for staying so long. We look forward to having you all back and having some more exciting presentations.
Thank you.
During the rest of the year. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Holly, do I hop off?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Are you guys? Thank you, Liz.
All right.
All right, let me, this is Larry. I'm going to stop the transcription and give me one second.